everybody. How are you doing today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Good show today, a really good show today. I'm looking forward to both of my guests that are going to be on the program. And before we do that, you know, sometimes I like to announce things that I'm grateful for. It feels good to do that, and I recommend that everyone think about things that they're grateful for, especially if you're in a moment where you're feeling a little down and out. Think about what you're grateful for. I guarantee you, you will feel better instantly. And that's not why I'm doing this right now. It's just because I really am grateful, and I just want to say it. So I've said this before, but I can't say it enough, and that is I am so grateful for my volunteer transcribers. You know, we do this program every week, and I usually have one or two guests, and I have these wonderful volunteers from all over the world, young and not as young as the young ones, older, and they volunteer and they transcribe my programs, and so it's a great resource. We have them archived on our program here on my Responsible Eating and Living website, and you can access them anytime. In fact, I use them myself. And the volunteers, they get something out of it too. I love when I get the feedback from them saying, oh, this program was so interesting. I learned a lot. And it's just a win-win all around. And I hope that you're taking advantage of it too. Now, since I am using volunteers, the transcriptions don't come up as soon as the program is archived. But they do show up a few weeks after. I put them up as soon as I can, in fact. Oh, I just realized that we had my next guest on about a year ago, Jim Hicks, J. Morris Hicks. We had him on last year in July, and we talked about a book he had written, Healthy Eating, Healthy Planet. And I always like to review the program, the last program I had with a guest before I speak to them again, just to refresh my mind what we spoke about. And, you know what? I just need to, I've got too many tools up here, and I need to text my guest. Please bear with me here, because he just texted me and doesn't realize that it's the studio that's going to be calling. And please bear with me. Anyway, so I just posted. I'm going to text and talk at the same time. I've just posted the old transcript from last year because somehow it dropped off. I thought I posted it, and I didn't post it, and I just realized that I didn't. So I just posted it anew, got to read it, and it's there. So it's there for you to look at, and I recommend that you do. And, okay, let me just text my guest here. Oh, good. Now we're all together. That's great. Anyway, so that's what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for my volunteers that are just awesome and transcribing away. And even when I drop one and don't remember to post it, I do get to it eventually. And they really are really very useful. In fact, somebody made a comment recently about butter and how saturated fat was good and how butter was good. And they were responding to an interview I did with Dr. Neil Barnard. And in responding to that post, I went to my interview with Brenda Davis, wonderful dietitian, and she and Vasanta Molina write terrific books together. My favorites are The Comprehensive, Becoming Vegan, and I went to my interview with her and grabbed the transcript from a section of it where we talk just about butter and saturated fat and how they aren't healthy and how the research shows that they're not healthy, and how she talked about this one particular new study that's come out about butter that said it was healthy. And she talked about how even one of the researchers on the article admitted that saturated fat wasn't healthy, butter isn't healthy, but they had to redesign this meta study that they did so that it could get published. Anyway, I'm grateful for the transcriptions that I have. I use them. I hope you do too. Now let's bring on my guest and friend, J. Morris Hicks. And he's the author, as I mentioned before, of Healthy Eating, Healthy World, and the creator of the four-leaf concept. And he has a new book, The Four-Leaf Guide to Vibrant Health. He's got over 900 posts, articles on his website. And he's been on the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies Board of Directors since 2012. And his new book just was published 2 weeks ago. Jim, how are you doing?
I'm great, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm glad that we were able to connect. I kind of had to multitask there, and it's interesting when you're texting and trying to talk at the same time what happens. But, okay, that's all past us now. You're a busy guy, aren't you?
Yes, and before we get started, I wanted to give you a little thank you, a big thank you. I don't know if you recall, but you have made a big difference in my life, in my career. Back in 2005, you arranged and hosted three separate venues at the same location, Zen Palette Restaurant, Union Square, and through those meetings, I met Colin Campbell and his wife, Caldwell Esselstyn and his wife, and Joel Fuhrman. And I ended up working closely with all three of those gentlemen, those wonderful scientists and doctors. And hadn't it been for you and arranging those events, who knows where I would be today and if I would have indeed written a book by myself. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. Well, I'll never forget when I first met you, this tall, slim, handsome, well-dressed man walking into my event. We didn't have a lot of those kind of people. We had all kinds of people, but you stood out of the crowd, and it was really lovely meeting you, and I really appreciate you sharing that little story. I'm kind of getting a little emotional here. We never know who we touch and what's going to happen as a result, and I'm really, really enamored with all of the work that you've been doing. I'm glad you found your path and that you're working very vigorously. I'm stuttering a lot here. Vigorously and passionately on that path. All right, let's get started now and talk about your newest venture, the Four-Leaf Guide to Healthy Eating. Do you want to tell us about it?
I sure do. Four-Leaf Guide to Vibrant Health. It began, I guess, a little over a year ago, year and a half ago, when a medical doctor in the Finger Lakes region, Dr. Carrie Graff, had recently seen Forks Over Knives and had become enlightened and passionate about whole food plant-based nutrition and was wanting to introduce her 800 patients to that way of eating in her medical practice. And so she was looking for ways and tools that would help her communicate that message because, let's face it, doctors only have about 10 minutes with each patient these days.
Yep.
So she found my four-leaf program website and my four-leaf survey, and at that time the only way to take the survey was to print it off and fill it out with a pencil. So she did that, and she really liked the concept of four-leaf, and she wrote me an email and said, I would like to find out if I can get your permission to use this stuff in my practice, this four-leaf materials. And so we got on the phone and talked about it, and I said, absolutely. I said, I created that four-leaf survey about 4 years ago, and no one has ever really used it very much. And so that's outstanding. And so one thing led to another. She's now the chief medical officer for Four Leaf Global LLC. Her assistant Kristen is our administrative manager. My son and his wife are involved, as is my fiance Justine Robertson, who's our CFO. So along about October, we decided to write a book together because she had a lot of stuff she wanted to put in the book that that would save her a lot of time in communicating it to her patients. So we decided to make it a four-leaf guide to vibrant health, using the power of food to heal ourselves and our planet, and make it about a 50-50 book, concentrating on healthy, on health for humans and also health for the environment. And, it was published 2 weeks ago today. It's now available on Amazon worldwide in Kindle and in, paperback.
Congratulations, and thank you for writing the Four-Leaf Guide to Vibrant Health. Let's talk a little bit about the survey. I took the survey a few minutes ago, and I am in level four, the four-leaf.
Well, I would be real surprised if you weren't.
I was very surprised to get that result.
But first of all, to define the survey, the four-leaf concept is basically a concept of eating based on maximizing the percent of your daily calories from whole plants. And that means it's not necessarily vegan or vegetarian, but it more than likely is vegan for most people that do it. But what it is it implies some wiggle room. In other words, you could eat 95% whole plants and have a piece of cheese on a cracker or something, and you would still be a four-leaf eater, is what we're talking about here. And as we know, in the world of vegetarians and vegans, where you and I spend a lot of time, a lot of them don't eat a very healthy diet. And that's because vegan and vegetarian pretty much defines what people don't eat, but doesn't define what they do eat, because you could eat nothing but Diet Coke and potato chips and be a vegan and wouldn't be very healthy. So we felt like we needed a new way to communicate healthy eating in a simple, you know, non-judgmental kind of format, which wasn't all or nothing, which was attractive, which was based on the positive being maximizing the positive foods instead of eliminating all the other foods. If you maximize all the positive foods, something's got to go, and it's going to be those animal-based foods. So we decided to use the definition that Dr. Colin Campbell came up with. He said, the closer we get to eating a diet of whole plant-based foods, the better off we will be. When I heard that definition, I said, that is it. All of this debate about what's the best diet style, even the veggie docs have a lot of debates about it. But I think they all agree with that statement, and I said we should have a way of communicating that to people and maybe set up some levels. So we set up six levels. The lowest level is the typical Western diet or standard American diet, under 10% of calories from whole plants. And the next level is better than most, which is better than most people eating the typical Western diet, and that's from 10 to 20% whole plants. And then from 20 to 40 is the one-leaf level. And one leaf sounds low on a four-leaf scale, but it's 5 to 10 times as many whole plants as the typical standard American diet. Mm. So 40 to 60 is two-leaf, 60 to 80 is three-leaf, and over 80% of the calories is at the four-leaf level. So we devised a simple survey, very simple. It's 12 multiple-choice questions. You can take it at fourleafsurvey.com. online, and you get an extensive report if you ask for it via email, but you immediately find out what we estimate to be your four-leaf level from one of those six levels just by answering 12 multiple-choice questions. And we have the first three questions are all about fruits, vegetables, legumes, and grains and potatoes, and that's where you get the positive points. And then anything other than whole plants that you're eating, you actually get negative points. And so the scores can range from minus 44 to plus 44. We put a lot of fours in there. And the four-leaf level starts at 30 points and goes to 44. If you take it online, you don't really know how many points you got, but you you can tell immediately what level you are. And if you go to fourleafprogram.com, you can learn a lot more about all of those levels. So we kind of have a system here. You know, we have a book, we have a four-leaf survey, and then when you go to your doctor, and he cautions you about not eating cheese, dairy, and meat, and that kind of thing, we have a letter that Dr. Currygraf wrote, and it's in Chapter 37 of our book. It's also a printer-friendly version at fourleafprogram.com, and so that's another tool that we have that you can give to your doctor easily, just print it off, or you can give it to friends who are thinking you've lost your mind for not eating meat anymore.
Well, that's great, and we definitely need more doctors on board, because most people rely on their doctors for nutrition information, and we know that that's not what they study in medical school, and there's only a handful that know about nutrition, although I want to think that the younger doctors today are picking up a little bit more on good nutrition, so that's good. And having a four-leaf system, people like data, people like numbers, people like to know where they are, so I think that's good. And I agree about making this lifestyle not what we don't do, but what we do. And I found that every time I've eliminated certain foods from my diet, my choices have expanded. And there's so many wonderful foods to eat in the plant kingdom. And unless you stop depending on and stop eating some of these other animal-based foods and processed foods and junk foods, you don't have the opportunity to experience everything that you're missing. It's a big, wonderful, delicious world of plant foods out there.
Certainly is. You mentioned the younger doctors. My fantasy would be to have some of these younger doctors, like Currygraf. Curry is a Cornell undergrad, summa cum laude. She went to med school and has been practicing medicine now for 20 years. There's another one, Michelle McMackin, who endorsed our book. Her endorsement is on the back of the book. She's an assistant professor of medicine at NYU School of Medicine. She's director of Bellevue Hospital Weight Management Clinic in New York City. Also, there's several other of these. Those two in particular, my fantasy would be to have the two of them appear on Ellen DeGeneres and talk about the future of medicine. Two young women who have sterling educational credentials. I think Michelle went to Yale undergrad and studied the humanities, and then she went to med school at Columbia, and now she's an assistant professor, and she's in her mid-30s, I think, a young woman. But these people have gotten the best educations, and all of a sudden they realize that their profession has some incredible failures, and it's costing people their lives. And for example, when Curry first saw Forks Over Knives, she told me she wished that all of those people in the movie, Esselstyn, Campbell, etc., she wished that they were a bunch of veggie loving quacks and she could just go about business as usual. But she realized, she did her study, she realized that everything was based on science and clinical evidence in that movie. And she said, well, I've got to change my practice. So without understanding how she was going to make a living teaching people how to get well, she just started making changes. And I think Michelle McMackin probably did the same thing. Kaiser Permanente has 17,000 physicians, and I'm estimating that less than 1% of those are basically promoting health with plant-based nutrition. But I do know of one of them, and we have communicated, and he has been featured on Forks Over Knives. His name is Dr. Stephen LaWinda, and he operates in Lancaster, California. So it's happening, but it's happening way too slow for my taste. At my age, you know, I want to be around to see the ecosystem start healing. And if we don't change what we eat in the Western world, our ecosystem is going to make it impossible for our civilization to continue, and things get pretty rough on this planet for my grandchildren.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, since we last spoke, which was July of 2014, your impressions were pretty bleak about what was going on with the environment. You had some ideas about how to change things in terms of getting some really wealthy people together to promote what we feel needs to be done. Anything good happened since that time other than or focusing on your four-leaf guide to vibrant health?
Well, yeah, a lot of good things are happening. A lot more people are getting on board. The Plantrition Project, my good friend Susan Benegas at Plantrition.org, Plantrician. The Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. There's a lot of great things happening. A lot of young doctors are picking this up, but there's still not enough communication about the overall impact of what we're eating. I kind of narrowed it down, and I said we really have four things that we're doing that are totally, grossly unsustainable for very much longer. One is overpopulation. We got too many people on this planet at 7.3 billion, and that's going to take decades, if not centuries, to get that under control. Then we have the way we consume, overconsumption. You know, our entire global economy is based on maximization of stuff and a consumption of stuff in a world of finite resources. And then we have those first two kind of driving the third one, which is basically our dependence on fossil fuels for most of our energy. And we still depend on it for most of our energy. And haven't made much progress there. So all three of those are going to require decades, if not centuries, to fix. But the fourth one is the way we eat. And conveniently, the fourth one, the way we eat, causes more environmental problems than the other three. It's the leading cause of most of our environmental problems, including climate change. So my feeling is that if we can get that word out, we have, and I'd suggest that we need some wealthy leaders. We need people that are credible, have well-known names, are respected, have integrity, and they're going to need a big budget in order to really create the kind of communication effort that will be needed to get to everyone. We don't have time to go through countries and bureaucrats and presidents and leaders and organizations. It's a worldwide system of feeding humans the wrong food, and what we eat determines how the whole world is used, and it's just not working.
But the good it's so frustrating, as you know, and I know.
Can change their diet tomorrow, can change tonight, and be totally eliminating the meat and dairy in just a few weeks. So if enough people change, we can make a huge difference in this world.
Yeah, I know you're as frustrated as I am sometimes, because we have solutions. We have solutions, and they're really not expensive to put into place. People can just do it on their own. It's just, I guess, the expense is in getting the word out and educating people and having them believe it. But the answers are there, and it makes you want to scream. And screaming is not really a good marketing tool, because that only pushes people away when you start screaming at them. But it really is very frustrating. I mean, I experience it on so many levels, including in my private coaching, where I'm helping people move to a healthier diet. There's only so much you can convey in a 45-minute session, and people have their own beliefs, and you have to be really careful transmitting the information. It's not like we can use that Vulcan mind meld technique and have people understand everything all in 1 second, although I really wish we could do something like that, because we have the answers. It's so frustrating.
Well, you don't have to reach all of the people to have a revolution. You know, I think if we were to had the budget to have a global, huge global communications effort to communicate the truth about nutrition from credible sources, from people that are respected on a global basis, and people will start changing when they start hearing that message four, five, six times a day from people they trust. And gradually people start changing their diets. And at certain points you hit a tipping point in terms of change. And I'm thinking that point is going to be around 20-25% of the population that is understanding that we've got to eat more whole plants and less meat, dairy, eggs, and fish. But we get to that point, I think we gain a lot of momentum, and all of a sudden it becomes like smoking. It ain't the thing to do anymore. It's just not cool.
Yeah, I don't think we're far from that.
I think we're a global leader or two or three with maybe $100 billion marketing budget. That sounds like a big budget, right? Well, some stupid app was just sold for $40 billion. Some smartphone app. I mean, $100 billion is nothing compared to the collapse of our civilization. And there's two people in the world that have that much wealth between them.
Yeah.
I can visualize a solution, and I'm working toward it, but going to need a lot of help.
So I agree with you on the big picture, and the big picture about eliminating animal foods and having people concentrate on whole plant foods. Such an important message. There are some fine points that not all of us agree on, and I don't think it's that critical, but I want to bring up one little point because it's really important to me. And you talk about how fruit and vegetable juice are not good choices, and I want to just clarify that because I really believe that green juice that is made from kale and collards and then kind of mixed with maybe celery and lemon and ginger, it's something that saved my life. And I don't want to tell people that that's not a healthy thing to do. And I've spoken with Dr. Russell Stan and Dr. Campbell about this a little bit. And I think what they're trying to do is have people understand that having fruit juice, which is primarily sugar, is not a healthy thing. But green juicing can be very effective, especially if you're in a crisis mode, to get immune system boosting nutrients into your body quickly.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I'm no scientist and I'm no physician, but Carrie, I think, wanted to make sure we had in the book that we pointed out that if you are loading up on getting a lot of your calories from juice, that you're missing the fiber, number one, and you get a sugar spike and that sort of thing. I juiced every day for the first 7 years of this, and I was extremely healthy then, and I am now. Hello?
Hello.
I'm not going to answer, obviously. But I finally got tired of throwing away perfect pile of fiber every day, and I just said, you know what, this is hard for me to do, and I just don't do it, but I certainly don't. I'm not against it.
Okay, good. Yeah, there are things you can do with the fiber if you have access to composting.
Right.
And I like to recycle my juice fiber as much as I can to get as much juice out of it. But it's not a bad thing nutritionally, and that's what I wanted to say.
So we
just have like a minute or two left, so let's just talk about your four-leaf guide to vibrant health once again and where people can find it and how they can take the survey and find out more.
Okay. Well, go to Amazon, four-leaf guide, and it'll come right up. And when you get to the page, it shows it's available in Kindle and at Amazon. If you got Amazon Prime, it's free. Kindle is under $8. I think it's $7.44 or something like that. If you buy the paperback, you get to buy the Kindle for $2.99. And our website at fourleafprogram.com has lots of things on there. Kristen Keyes is our webmaster, and she's adding recipes and cookbooks, and we're adding different tools that people can print off. We've got one that's the top 10 list of why and the top 10 list of how on the same sheet of paper you can put on your refrigerator. So it's under the toolkit at fourleafprogram.com, and print off some of these helpful tools that you can use in your home. So all of that is available. All the stuff on our website is available for free to the international public. We're also looking to license the trademark at some point, maybe for restaurants, maybe for grocery stores.
That'll be good.
But different ways to leverage the brand Four Leaf once it becomes more recognized.
Right. That sounds great. Okay. So everybody, take your Four Leaf survey and find out where you're at. And then we can talk about how you can move up to being Four Leaf or even Four Leaf Plus. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Jim, so much for everything you're doing. It's really amazing, and you're helping changing the world. And I hope you get to see every change that you want to see before you move on to your next role in the universe. All right, thank you so much for joining me. Jay Morris Hicks, Four Leaf Guide to Vibrant Health. Let's take a quick break. Hello, everybody. I'm back. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. And before we move to my next guest, who I am so excited to have on the program, I wanted to talk about something in the news right now that I'm finding fascinating. And that has to do with the pork crisis in France. I don't know if you've been reading about it. I do like to read some of the French papers online. I spent 4 years living in the south of France in the early 90s, and I just have an affinity for France, and I like to keep up with what's going on there. So there's this pork crisis going on, and there's two things in particular that are going on that I wanted to bring up and then share my solution, which is the same for both. And one is that a French court last Thursday upheld a local move to stop offering alternatives to pork in the school cafeterias. And this sparked some trouble with the Muslim leaders and is possibly setting a precedent for cities elsewhere in the country to do the same. And the thing about France, which I love, is how they're a laic state, which means they really separate church and state. We say we do here in the United States, but we don't. And I studied a little bit when I was living in France, and they really go out of their way to make a clear line between the two. So that means in schools, they can't make an exception or accommodation for religion, including making special meals for religious peoples. But I find it curious because what do vegetarians and vegans do? Those people who, not for religious reasons, but for ethical reasons, want to avoid eating flesh. And unfortunately, I don't believe they make accommodations for them. I remember a new policy being put into place a little over a year ago, making it mandatory that meat be served and not given replacement for it unless I believe a student comes with a doctor's note or something along those lines. I don't like that. And then another thing that's going on with pork is the price of pork. Apparently, it takes more in France to produce pork than it does in other countries like Germany and Poland. And as a result, their prices are higher, but the pork is selling for a lower price these days. And one of the things I've always loved about the French people, especially when I was living there, is that they don't take things sitting down that they don't like. They strike. I remember that the farmers were so annoyed, they just dropped truckloads of peaches along the autoroute so people couldn't pass. They make their feelings known, and they're protesting now against these high prices where they're not getting a profitable price for the pork that they're selling. And they're also saying that, you know, these other cheaper products are inferior, they're not as good tasting, and they're not as high in quality. And of course, I don't believe in selling these precious animals, these pigs, for meat and for human consumption. You know that I'm against that, right? So my solution to these two major problems, poor crisis, is I'm going to quote my dad and one of his favorite expressions: if you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem. And the way to eliminate this problem is to eliminate eating animals, period. The problem goes away in schools with the religious problems, and the problem goes away with the pricing. End of story. That's my solution, and you heard it right here on It's All About Food. And you can give me comments, questions at info@realmeals.org. All right. Now, let's move on to my next guest. I've been trying to get her on the program for a really, 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 really long time, but she's a very busy woman. Colleen Holland is passionate about media. She's the publisher and co-founder of Veg News Magazine. Since the company's founding in 2000, she has grown the vegan lifestyle brand into an award-winning international media company, complete with a flagship magazine, digital properties, events, e-cookbooks, and global vacation. She's a graduate of UCLA and the Natural Gourmet Institute Culinary School. Colleen is one of just six people worldwide to have been inducted into both the Vegetarian Hall of Fame and the Animal Rights Hall of Fame, a 20-year ethical vegan. She is a diehard foodie and yogi. Colleen, how are you?
Karen, I can't believe this moment has arrived. My God, we're finally meeting. I mean, we know each other, but we're finally doing this interview. I'm so happy.
Me too. It's taken me years to get you.
I'm so sorry. It's just been an interesting couple of years, but I'm so thrilled to be with you right now, and it's great to be here.
Yeah. Now, you know, we don't need to go into the details of that big hump that you got over, and but you were a very strong and powerful woman. I don't know if you want to mention any of that, but I'm glad you got to the other side and are triumphing.
Karen, thank you so much. I'm a belief in positive thinking and looking forward and not backwards. And so all I will say is that great things are happening, and the new issue of Veg News ships this week, actually, so the timing of this is really nice, and things are going to be better than ever. So sometimes we have to go through a little bit of rough times and adversity to come out the other end and really reshape our lives into what we want it to be and what it should be. And it was a little correction along the way, and I'm just so thrilled to be where I am right now and bring Veg News back to all of my amazing readers and to the community, and it's just a really good time.
Well, I always think of songs to explain things, and I'm just going to go, how can I miss you if you won't go away?
And well, it's nice because I know you can sing, so you can get away with that.
We did miss all the great things we were getting from Veg News, and so you're back and better than ever. And it's definitely the premier vegan lifestyle magazine, and I've been fortunate. My nonprofit was featured back in 2011 as one of the best nonprofits that you need to follow and take a look at. And that's, you know, right after we launched, it was really exciting to get that recognition. And I know that my brother and sister-in-law were featured in one when they got married as a vegan wedding.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You guys have definitely graced the pages of Veg News. In fact, the issue that is about to be put in the mail is our annual wedding edition. So it's our 14th annual, and I was just thinking before this call about your brother, and that was fun. You know, Veg News is an incredible brand, and it withstood sort of the ups and the downs, but we have such a great community, a great readership who are passionate about this lifestyle, and you know, love Veg News. And so the support we've received has been fantastic, and I'm just so excited to really be able to provide what everybody wants. And I, you know, I've sort of, as you mentioned in my very, very nice intro, thank you, as a 20-year vegan myself, ethical vegan, I've sort of created my own dream magazine. What would I want to read every week or every 2 months? And you know, and so I get to do that each and every day, and I'm just so grateful for that.
Now I'm looking at the picture that you sent me, which is on my website, and you're holding the classic French food issue. And I'm quite curious about that, since I mentioned earlier that I lived in the south of France for 4 years. And a lot of people say, you know, how can you go to France and eat vegan? Well, I live there, and ate vegan, and all of my French friends were really wonderful in preparing foods that were vegan for me. They might have been a little heavy on the olive oil and salt, but they were filled with love. And I'm curious about this issue, the classic French food.
You bet. That's actually from 2 years ago. It was our food issue. It was September, October 2013. And it was sort of 2 years ago, it was so unusual. It was almost an oxymoron, vegan French food. How is that possible? But Miyoko Shinner, who we all know behind Miyoko's Kitchen and is the creator of this wonderful new vegan artisan cheese company here in Northern California, is a classically trained French chef, and she developed these recipes for that issue. And, you know, crepes and gâteaux and butter and just sort of the rich French foods made vegan. But fast forward 2 years, we actually have a kind of a vegan guide to Paris in this new issue that's being shipped by my travel and beauty editor, Aurelia D'Andrea, who lives in Paris. And within literally the past 2 years, France is becoming very veg-friendly, and it's becoming very vegan-friendly, and it's sort of taking Paris by storm. And it came up unexpectedly, and the beauty of it is, of course, the French, being such foodies, are doing incredible things with vegan food. You know, they just know how to prepare it, and everything is in its whole form, you know, just making the fruits and the vegetables the very best they can be, and of course their French way of savoring and enjoying and making it beautiful. So I actually, things have changed dramatically there very quickly, and Aurelia talks about all these places now having soy and almond and hemp milk, and green juice is all the rage, and there's cooking classes where you can learn to make American vegan milkshakes and tofu scrambles, and it's just happened very quickly.
Well, I'm very excited to hear that, and I want to take all the credit and say that it was because I was running around screaming all over that country in the early 90s.
Listen, you deserve credit. I mean, it's all about the grassroots in my mind. These things don't just happen overnight. These seeds were sprinkled for years before, and this is true of really any social change. These things don't happen overnight.
You know, the vegetarians came out of the closet early in 2000 with their Veggie Pride Parade, and I actually got to go to one of those early on. It was hysterical.
I know, a little hokey, but getting the job done, and here we are, and we're here because of those brave people who spoke their truth and, you know, wanted more vegan food and went public with it.
I just want to add one more story, and then I want to hear more about Veg News. But most of the country in France, when I was roaming around, they were very accommodating, especially in the south, where everything is fresh and they use olive oil for a lot of their vegetable cooking. The only time I had a problem was in Paris, and I speak fluent French, so it wasn't because they didn't understand me. But I remember being there maybe in the late 90s, visiting with my sister's family, kind of helping them navigate the city. And we were in a bistro, which is kind of like the equivalent of an American diner. They serve just about everything. And I couldn't find anything other than French fries on the menu, and I didn't want French fries. And I saw that they had vegetables and a wide variety of things. So I told the server that I wanted one of their omelets served without eggs. It had all these vegetables in it. And he said, no, I can't do that. Come on, you've got the vegetables. Just give it to me without the eggs. No, can't do that.
Like, it just wasn't part of his fabric. He was incapable of it. Yeah,
couldn't do it. And they were all on the side, like, laughing at this crazy American asking for an omelet without eggs.
And
well, I'm not crazy anymore.
Oh, no, not at all. And of course, you know, you end up eating French fries. Well, after working with Aurelia on this piece, I so want to go. I haven't been to France in years. I so want to go. And now you can get croissant. You can get hot chocolate with soy milk or almond milk. And just the thought of sitting in a cafe leisurely and having these foods and experiencing you know, French culture and cuisine this way, because typically, as many Americans go, and it's interesting that you had an easier time in the South versus Paris. Usually it's the other way around in most countries.
It is.
But you end up with the baguette and, you know, some fruit from the local market. So you're not really experiencing true French cuisine, but that's changing very, very rapidly. And like I said, with the French, their stamp of excellence on everything they do, you know it's going to be good. I think they're skipping right over all the processed foods and just going into like, oh, how can we make delectable haute cuisine plant-based?
It's such a natural for them, and I'm glad that they're finally realizing that.
It is. All right, so now you got to plan another trip and see how different it is.
La belle France, elle me manque. Okay, so tell me about this new issue of Veg News.
Well, again, the timing is so wonderful because it is being shipped this week. It is our food issue, but we've got such a range of stories and recipes. We've got a really fascinating piece on the convergence of food and technology and all the, like, big-time investors like Bill Gates and Biz Stone and Mark Benioff investing in food technology companies that are some of the fastest-growing food companies in the world that happen to be vegan. And that's one of my favorite pieces in the book. It gives me so much hope, and it's very exciting. And these companies, these food companies, are trying to mimic the taste and consistency of you know, meat and dairy and egg and leather. And I really think that's how we're going to change the world, is we're just going to replace animal products with products that, you know, aren't cruel and don't require factory farms. So it's
the concept is genius, and I'm not exactly sure who was the first one to come up with the idea that we can make the same end product and just change some of the input products, not from animals but from plants. And the bottom line is the product ultimately is better and less expensive.
Well, I think, you know, in all the studies they've done, the key has to be the flavor has to be there. You know, Americans do not want to be deprived, and they don't want it to taste very different than what they're used to. And B, the price point has to be there. You and I are lifestyle vegans. We're going to pay for organic. We're going to pay more just to get exactly what we want. But frankly, the vast majority of Americans don't make those buying choices. And so we got to make sure it's the right price and the flavor is there. And these companies, even though similar companies have been doing it for decades, you know, have created the vegan mayos and the vegan alternative meats, these new companies are all about going mainstream and really mimicking those mainstream flavors and price points. And that's what's so unique, and using technology and science to do it versus, you know, just sort of chef created in the kitchen. So it's just something I'm really excited about as an activist, and you know, what that holds, and the investment. Oh my gosh, the mainstream investment world is banking big time on these new trends, and that gets me very excited.
Yeah, it is exciting. I was just talking with J. Morris Hicks and how we're going to make this major change that is so necessary for the future of all life on Earth. Mm-hmm. And what's necessary is big investment. And we see it happening.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we can certainly, you know, I mentioned the importance of grassroots, and I really believe that in planting seeds and moving big social movements forward. But when you to scale it, to go big, to make drastic change, it has to happen on this level where economics are involved, where, you know, mass consumerism is involved. It's not just a niche in our little perfect vegan world. So that's what's happening, and that's what the shift is. And a writer who's written for years for us, Matt Thomas, did the piece, and it's great. Of course, as I mentioned, vegan weddings can never get enough. I still cry when I read every single one. They're so touching. And these menus, like, just when you think vegan food can't get any better, my God, these people, they have at these weddings, they have stations and cookies and milk stations and mac and cheese stations and pizza stations, and then they, you know, all the way to the really high-end weddings at the Four Seasons with multiple courses, and it's incredible. I mean, the food is so good. There really is, as we know, no reason to not be vegan in 2015. The food is so delicious.
what we know and what people really need to discover is this is not a diet of deprivation, and these weddings are going to continue to become more and more incredible because the plant kingdom in terms of food is far more vast than the animals that we've chosen to eat and what we can do with them. There's just
so much more we can do with plants. The veil is finally being lifted on the issues. I mean, there's so much more mainstream media coverage of factory farms and the environmental link to what's going on around the world with climate change and diet. And of course, you know, the big driver right now is health, and people finally taking health into their own hands and saying, wow, I got to clean up my act and I want to live a good quality of life. And a plant-based diet is definitely the way to do that. But all these things are coming together for big change, and it's good.
Okay, not only do we have your latest issue coming out on the stands, which everybody needs to check out and pick up a copy, but you've got the Veg News Awards.
We do, the Veggie Awards. It is our 15th annual Veggie Awards. They're the world's largest survey of vegan products, people, and places. And we literally started it in the year 2000, the year we launched. And they're going gangbusters. I mean, everybody has an opinion. Everybody wants to share their favorite vegan cheese and chocolate and blogger and city. And the companies, the nominees get really excited, A, to be nominated, but B, is a chance to generate some buzz with their customer bases and fans. So that happens during the entire month of August. And, you just go to veggies.com/veggieawards and vote. And we always have awesome prizes like a vegan cheese party or vegan ice cream for a year or chocolate fudge. You know, we've got great product, great prizes for some of our voters.
So anybody can go and anybody can vote.
Anybody can go, and anybody can vote, and anybody can win.
Very good. Well, I hope one day responsible eating and living, my nonprofit, or maybe it's all about food, this radio show might be nominated. That would be nice.
I would hope so, Karen. I would hope so. And, you know, the way to do that is to encourage your listeners to write in the write-in, and then the top vote getters for the writing categories get bumped up to nominations the following year. So that is how they're chosen.
Okay, well, my listeners, you need to get active, okay?
You got to launch an all-out campaign. Let's do this.
There you go. Okay, well, I think we should. Okay, what other than the magazine is Veg News Magazine?
Obviously we've got all the, you know, we've got a really great website full of rich vegan content, kind of daily news stories, recipes, lifestyle coverage, and that's refreshed every day. Lots of great content there. Very active in social media. I think we're about 450,000 fans on Facebook and 110 on Twitter right now. So we're doing that. Something else that is exciting, and I hope you'll join us in New York, is just yesterday we launched with this new issue. We're doing three launch parties. In San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles. And, of course, they're going to be delicious and food-focused. We're doing a tiki party in San Francisco, a Mexicali fiesta in L.A., and then a comfort food in New York catered by Mr. Jay Astafa, who I know is a local.
Oh, Jay. We love Jay.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have his food. But so those parties are going to sell out fast. So readers are really excited about that, and we'll celebrate the new issue, eat like crazy, drink like crazy, and just have some good vegan fun. So those are all in September.
Remember, this diet, this lifestyle is all about fun, delicious food, and partying. We are having a good time here, and we all look hot and sexy because we're healthy. We're not aging as fast as everybody else. It's a win-win-win-win-win, and Colleen, you're just such an important part of moving this forward, this fabulous vegan lifestyle. Whew!
Oh, you're too kind. Well, it's certainly, I agree, zero deprivation. There's no reason not to be vegan, but I also love being a healthy vegan, too. And you know, drinking our green juice like you were talking about earlier and eating whole foods so that we can really indulge in all the wonderful vegan options there are today.
Yeah, I like to say my version of big food, people like to talk about big food. My big food is like two giant 15-inch chargers filled with kale salad. And it's great. It's delicious.
Yeah, I just had steamed greens for lunch and black beans, and I'm in heaven, you know. I mean, it just when you get to that point where you're really fueling your body with what it wants, it just wants clean, simple food, but heck, am I going to go out and have a chocolate torte for a friend's birthday and champagne vegan? You bet. But my baseline is the really healthy vegan foods.
Great. Well, Colleen, I'm so glad we had this moment together. I look forward to seeing you sometime again soon. I can give you a big vegan hug. And all the best with Veg News. Go!
Oh, Karen, thanks so much for your support. Hopefully I'll see you in New York. And hopefully I'll be on sooner than later again. Well, I'd love to talk all things food and all things vegan, my two favorite subjects.
Me too. Great. All right, take care.
Okay, Karen, talk to you soon.
Okay. We just have a few seconds left, and I wanted to direct you to responsibleeatingandliving.com, my nonprofit website. And you know I have this blog, What Vegans Eat, and I talk every day about what I eat, so you can get a sample of the variety of delicious food I eat. And one of my recent blog posts this week, not only did I talk about what I eat, but I talked about where I shop and where I get the foods that I eat. I think that's a helpful tool. So just head over to responsibleeatingandliving.com and check on the What Vegans Eat tab for that blog. All right, we've come to the end of the program. How does that happen so quickly every time? Well, remember, have a delicious week.